Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I think financial practice is going to be very, very different, and that when we look back a few years from now, we're going to see a very different American financial industry.
So presidential economics advisor Larry Summers imagines a very different financial industry in the coming years. What about you? The Obama administration, as you know, has proposed bank and Wall Street overhauls, and they're controversial, and some people think they don't go far enough, others think they go too far. But it's clear that the conversation should be open for all of us to reimagine the financial industry. So we've been asking you to help rewrite the rules of Wall Street together. And during the last segment we did on this, we got lots of great specific suggestions. We'll keep building it and then have you vote on what the top 10 new rules of Wall Street should be. We'll revisit some of those now and go further with Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes. We'll get his input. He sits on the House Financial Services Committee and has been involved in lots of these restructuring discussions. He also brings a unique perspective to this by virtue of having worked for 10 years at Goldman Sachs. Congressman Himes, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Delighted to be with you.
And let's start with that quote from Larry Summers, and then we'll get into the specifics. But do you believe him? Do you really think that financial practice is going to be very, very different, as he put it, a few years from now?
I do. You know, we, coming out of this bubble, have learned to our great peril that when the financial services industry, you know, operates in an unfettered fashion and is allowed to take risk, it makes a lot of money for some people for a limited period of time, but that it sets us up in just for a degree of risk that we cannot handle. You know, having spent some time in the industry, obviously, it's a critical industry. It lends to our businesses. It raises money for our startups. It lends money to our families and all that stuff. But you do reach a point, and we certainly reached that point when, you know, the financial sector of our economy was accounted for 30% to 40% of our national profits, where the activity is not so much supportive of the economy as it is just, you know, gambling, if you will. Lots of people making money with lots of risk. And I think we're going to get back to a world where that sector really services the real economy.
And listeners, we want to continue to get your input on this question of how we remake banking. When we had New York Times columnist Joan O'Sara on 2 weeks ago, we asked for your suggestions, and we got lots of very specific and very interesting proposals. Let's continue to build the body of knowledge here. We've posted a link to that discussion, and the conversation continues today with Congressman Jim Himes of Connecticut. How would you rewrite the financial rules? Go ahead and post at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or call in to offer your suggestions directly to Congressman Himes, who actually has a voice in this on the Financial Services Committee, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, Congressman, I mentioned that we had New York Times business columnist Joan O'Sara, and he criticized the Geithner plan as a million little things, but no new big thing. He likened it to sticking a lot of plugs in a leaking dam rather than rebuilding it entirely. What do you make of that criticism?
Well, I think this was a dam that fell down because it had a million little leaks. You know, the fact that AIG's credit default swap business was basically unregulated, and the fact that American households took on really imprudent levels of debt are in some ways through 6 or 7 degrees of separation connected, but they're not the same problem. And so, you know, I think the Geithner plan is an attempt, and you know, you, as you know, we will in Congress be working in the coming 3 weeks to turn this into legislation. This is really an attempt to say, you know, what are the 10, 12, 15 things that went wrong? What can we learn, and what do we need to do about them?
And we said we want to keep our listeners' ideas involved, so let's take a listen to one suggestion offered in our last segment on this by Rob in Morristown.
To me, one of the most important thing, not the only important thing, is that no financial institution, banks or otherwise, should be allowed to invest any more than an extremely small percentage of the total assets under their control in derivatives or any exotic financial instrument.
And that was a criticism also echoed by Nocera and lots of other listeners, that the current plan doesn't address the complex derivatives that got us into this mess in the first place. no matter how much you regulate them, they are fundamentally unstable, according to some critics. What do you make of that critique, Congressman?
Well, I think on the margins it's a fair critique. I mean, we need to remember that derivatives mean everything from pork belly futures, which, you know, are pretty simple to understand, to, you know, credit default swaps, which frankly probably nobody understood. So it's a mistake to lump them all in the same category. And, you know, there's something better than rules. And rules are important. But, you know, the thing about rules is that the minute you make a rule, a financial institution is going to get a bunch of lawyers together to figure out how to circumvent that rule. So I get really interested not in so much, you know, let's cap 3% or 4% or 7% of somebody's balance sheet in complex securities, but how do we make sure that, A, the risk is understood and transparent, and, B, how do we make sure that people bear the consequences of their risk-taking? You know, one of the real problems we had in financial services was that, you know, starting with a mortgage broker would write a mortgage, would sell it a week later, would securitize it, would sell it. And, you know, so the original underwriter, the person who took that initial risk, was no longer on the hook. And so before we get to the rules, I get really interested in the question of how do we make sure, and this is actually a part of the president's proposal, that people who create these securities, derivatives or otherwise, keep some skin in the game, keep 2, 3, 4, 5% of the security that they have created on their balance sheet at risk. Now I have to believe that people are going to be a little more thoughtful about the securities they create.
You mentioned skin in the game. Nocera talked about that too. Skin in the game meaning there has to be some money on the table by the institutions or their leading individuals who are creating these fancy instruments, so that they have some actual risk. But last week at the Aspen Ideas Festival, we hosted a panel on some of this. One of our guests was David Wessel, the economics editor of the Wall Street Journal, and he seemed to say that skin in the game isn't even enough anymore. Take a listen.
I think that we are entering in the U.S. an era of a great skepticism of the market, that we, the idea that if rich, sophisticated people were in the game and had their own money exposed, that they would keep the game honest and prevent the poker table from turning over, turned out to be wrong. So we're entering a period where there will be more faith and more reliance on government regulation, for better or worse.
Want to react to that, Congressman Himes?
Well, I agree with his conclusion, which is that we are going to see substantially more regulation of those entities and activities that were unregulated. I mean, I'm talking about the credit default swaps. I'm talking about the investment banks, which levered themselves up 40-1 at the peak. And, you know, those activities which were not regulated will be regulated. So I agree with his conclusion. But, you know, I'm not sure I agree with his premise. You know, it's not we weren't in a world where people bore the consequences of the decisions that they took. And we were just talking about it, right? The mortgage broker would write a mortgage for some family that he knew didn't have a prayer of servicing that mortgage under any sort of stressful scenario, but it didn't matter because that mortgage broker sold it on.
He got his fee and he walked away.
Exactly. So we lived in a world it wasn't really a market. It was a world where people could get paid to take risk and then offload that risk onto someone else. I mean, it was a big game of musical chairs. So, again, we get back to this concept of how can we set up a market where people take decisions and bear the consequences of those decisions over the, you know, life of that decision? That's not a world we were in.
So the two main things you're talking about so far this morning are this concept of skin in the game and also the transparency that you brought up before. But as far as transparency goes, what about the knowledge gap between regulators and the industry and the general public? Take a listen to another call we got. Nancy in Montclair, who is a former federal bank examiner, here's what she had to say.
Well, you can put in all the regulations you want, but frankly, until the environment is changed, where you have regulators who can go into these institutions and the regulators are as knowledgeable about the people who are trading these products, which they have not been to date, if you can take a lot of these traders who are now out of jobs and put them into regulatory positions.
Now, that was really interesting to me, Congressman, because she was really saying that the people who are the regulators, I guess she means people at the SEC and places like that, actually don't know enough, don't know as much as the people who are working in the banks. Do you think that's true?
I think it's always true, Brian. You know, the private sector is always going to have the resources to hire the minds, you know, the engineers, the physicists, the lawyers that will create complexity. And I'm not sure that's a real solvable problem unless you're willing to say something along the lines of, if there's an activity or a class of securities that are so complex that we as regulators don't begin to understand it, there will be a presumption that because of that complexity, we're going to really sit on it hard, require higher capital charges against these things. But I think that's a fact of life. The good news is that, you know, you can at some level quantify exposure. And, you know, what you really care about here in the world of risk is, you know, how much money, in particular borrowed money, is at risk. And when it comes down to it, if you can just get an honest answer to that question, of course, that's the whole ballgame, right, getting an honest answer to that question,
yeah,
you can at least wave some red flags around an activity or a security.
Congressman Jim Himes, my guest on WNYC for another few minutes. He's the freshman Democrat from Connecticut who unseated longtime Republican Christopher Shays, as you may remember, last fall. Former Goldman Sachs employee, now on the Financial Services Committee, and giving us his input to our series, Writing the New Rules for Wall Street. Peter in Riverdale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Brian. I'm really skeptical about any new idea having any impact as long as you have a revolving door between financial elite and government. If you have people coming in from Citibank into government or leaving government with the idea that they're going to go into some place that's going to pay them multi-millions of dollars a year, I think between the attorneys for the companies and the government, and people in Congress, in addition, are receiving a great deal in terms of from the lobbyists for their campaigns for their own financing.
So what about somebody
very
like?
Very little is going to be meaningful.
Do you think Congressman Himes should have been prevented from running because he has a background at Goldman Sachs?
Well, prevented is a strong word, but I think it's an issue that has to be addressed.
Congressman Himes?
I don't know how. I don't have the answer to that.
What about the revolving door, Congressman Himes?
Yeah, I think it probably pertains a little less to elected officials than it does to regulators, where I very much agree with the point. You know, there's way too many people leaving the regulators and going to join the firms that they previously regulated. We do have a model for dealing with that. You know, there are, of course, limits on your ability to leave government service and go right into lobbying. And I think we need to take a very hard look at that. We can't have the kind of cozy relationship that all too often existed between entities like the SEC and the groups that they regulated. That's a very fair point.
So there could be a one-way door, though, the other way, you're saying, right? Because it relates to the last caller who we replayed, that if there's a knowledge gap between the regulators and the people in the industry, you want people from the industry then becoming regulators. You don't want the regulators feeling that if they are lax in their oversight, then they could get high-paying jobs in the industry. Is it possible to set up a rule like that, though?
Well, I think you really do worry about, you know, people leaving the regulators to go to work for the regulated. Frankly, if we could figure out a way to take more of these, you know, financial whizzes off of the trading desks and put them into regulators so that they could, you know, really bring an inside knowledge to how this stuff works to the regulator, I think that would be terrifically healthy. You don't tend to see that much, though, because, of course, those guys can get paid an awful lot more multiples in the private sector than they can in the regulator. But if we could, you know, live in a world where there was sort of, you know, prestige associated with that kind of civil service, public service, I think we'd be a much healthier system.
Go ahead, and I'll finish your thought.
You know, on the government can only be assisted, and, you know, drawing on my own experience, I guess, you know, people can question how much of my philosophy was formed by some time working for a bank, but I actually think it's good and important to have people on the Financial Services Committee who understand businesses, who understand the sector that we're talking about. It's incredibly complex, incredibly technical and esoteric, and I think it's pretty important to have people on board who have a feel for how the machines operate.
So last thing before you go, because it always comes up, and that is the question of too big to fail. And I understand that your committee, the Financial Services Committee, will be holding a hearing on the idea of too big to fail next week. Lots of our listeners chime in to say that if something is too big to fail, or I know the administration's Austin Goolsbee, I heard him at Aspen last week saying, no, it's not too big to fail, it's too complex to fail, because there are all these interconnections. But the listeners say if it's too big, too complex to fail, it's too big to exist. And, you know, we had the chairman of Citigroup on, Richard Parsons, and he said, no, if the United States is going to be a leader in the world economy, we have to have institutions that are that big and complex. Do you have an opinion on too big to fail?
Well, it's been a little bit of a personal journey for me. I was initially and continue to be somewhat uncomfortable by the notion that we're going to identify these institutions that are too big to fail. We're going to put that sticker on them, and then we're going to say, okay, we're going to regulate you extra, you know, intensively. The moral hazard issue there is very concerning. You know, now you've got an entity running around doing what it does, thinking that it's got an implicit government guarantee. The point is a good one, though, that we live in a global financial market here, and we need our financial services sector to be able to compete with that. And I don't know how you would set about, you know, sort of turning the clock back to 1936 or 1934, but what I think you can do, and let's look at the example of AIG, you know, AIG. So turns out it was too big to fail. What if you did?
Or again, some would argue so interconnected, so complex in the way that Goolsbee meant it, too interconnected to fail, because however big it was that it would have brought down so much of the rest of the financial system, correct?
That's exactly right. And so if we had been able to say, you know, this book of credit default swaps that you have built up poses far too much a danger, you're not adequately capitalized to be a counterparty to the contracts that you've written over a period of time, you're going to wind this down, which, of course, is a feature of the president's proposal. I think that that's probably the right solution, unless you can think of a smart way for government, which doesn't tend to be the smartest player here, to say, this entity is going to be carved up into three or four pieces or two pieces, and that's just very, very hard to do.
Congressman Jim Himes, freshman Democrat from southwestern Connecticut. He is on the Financial Services Committee, which will be holding a too-big-to-fail hearing next week, and he used to work at Goldman Sachs. Thank you very much for your input into this.
Thank you, Brian.
And to the rest of you, we continue building the new rules for Wall Street. According to Brian Lehrer Show listeners, keep contributing to our page for this, which is up at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.